Investiture of the Gods, Chapter 48.
We're zeroing in on Chapter 48. This is where the immortal Zhao Gongming arrives, and he's got this weapon.
Ah, the weapon.
Right. It's so formidable. It's not just beating armies. It's like chilling the hearts of these really powerful, seasoned immortals. Brute force clearly isn't cutting it.
Okay, let's start right there then. The weapon itself, the Golden Zhao scissors, the Jin Jiao Jan. What makes it so devastating? It sounds, I don't know, almost cosmic horror level.
Yeah, that's actually a good way to put it. Look, this isn't some sword forged in a fire. It's basically a spiritual entity.
Okay.
These Golden Zhao scissors, they're formed by two spiritual dragons.
Yeah.
And these dragons have absorbed, like, the concentrated essence of heaven and earth.
Whoa.
So when Zhao Gongming unleashes them, the dragons, they twist up into the sky. Their heads meet like these giant cosmic scissors. And the text says they can cut any immortal in half.
Any immortal. So it doesn't matter how powerful they are. Their defenses.
That's the terrifying part. It seems to just bypass standard cultivation levels, traditional defensive magic.
It's
absolutely.
And the allies get a taste of this pretty much immediately, right? This isn't just theory for them.
Oh, absolutely not. It's brutal. One of their main leaders, Ran Deng, that's Burning Lamp, he's the first target.
And he's a major figure.
A very major figure. Now, Ran Deng himself, he manages to escape. He uses this specialized technique, the Wood Escape, the Mudun, staves his own skin.
Nah.
But his mount, his powerful plum blossom deer, not so lucky. The source doesn't pull any punches. It says the deer is instantly caught and just cut in two pieces.
Ugh, that's graphic. And it sends a message.
A horrifying message. It basically says your best tricks might save you personally, but your assets, your power base, your companions, they're fair game.
It's got to be completely demoralizing. Forces them into that emergency council meeting we read about.
Total despair. They're paralyzed by this overwhelming force. And it's right then, in that moment of hopelessness, that our kind of wild card arrives.
The disruptor. Lu Ya, land pressure.
Exactly. Lu Ya shows up.
So who is this guy? He just sort of appears. Volunteers to fight this unbeatable weapon.
But that's the thing. He's the ultimate outsider. And maybe that's why he's the only one who can do anything.
How so? What makes him an outsider?
His own descriptions, you know, the songs he sings and the text, they're really revealing. He calls himself an idle person of Western Kunlun, a wild man.
Okay. Sounds pretty detached.
Right. And crucially, he says he's neither immortal nor saint.
Yeah.
And here's the key part. He's not registered in the major institutions.
Not registered. What does that mean in this context? Like, no library card.
Huh. Sort of like that, but cosmically important. It means he's not part of the established immortal bureaucracy. He doesn't owe allegiance, doesn't bow at Xuandu or Yuzhun Palace.
Those are the big headquarters, right? The main spiritual organization.
Exactly. The power centers for the allied forces. Think about it. Zhao Gongning's weapon, the scissors, seems almost perfectly designed to take out the established powerful figures within those systems.
Ah, so Lu Ya being outside the system, he might be outside the weapons rules too.
That seems to be the implication. He operates on a different frequency, maybe.
Interesting. And he looks the part too. The text says he's short, red robe, this weird fishtail crown.
Yeah, definitely eccentric. But when he actually confronts Zhao Gongming, the fight is, well, it's incredibly short.
Over before it starts.
Almost. They trade maybe 3 or 5 exchanges. Zhao Gongming probably feeling pretty confident, maybe a bit arrogant after slicing up that deer.
Yeah, understandable, I guess.
He just unleashes the Golden Zhao scissors again, expecting another easy win.
And Lu Ya.
Lu Ya just shouts, "Good coming!" Which is a pretty bold thing to say.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then instantly transforms into a long rainbow and just vanishes, flees.
Okay, wait. So to everyone watching, that must look like he just chickened out. Turned tail and ran from the scary scissors.
It probably did look exactly like that. But the text is very clear. This wasn't cowardice. It was intel gathering.
Intel gathering? How?
By running away.
Tactical retreat. It explicitly says he needed to observe Zhao Gongming's appearance. He needed a good look at him. Specific visual data.
For what? What's he planning?
For the magical counterstrike he's got in mind. See, his power, whatever it is, isn't just about deflecting the scissors. He needs to go after Zhao Gongming himself, his spiritual core.
Right. Okay. But if Lu Ya is this powerful, this outside-the-box figure, why doesn't he just, you know, fight him? Why this incredibly complex, long ritual he sets up? It takes 21 days.
Now that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
The Zhao scissors are all about immediate, overwhelming physical destruction. Luya seems to recognize that trying to match that head-on, even with his unique abilities, is just risky. Unnecessarily risky.
So he opts for a different approach.
A completely different approach. Slow burn. Methodical. Psychological and ceremonial magic. He proposes the Dingtu Qijian Shu, the Nailhead Seven Arrows book.
The Nailhead Seven Arrows book? That sounds ominous. So he goes back to the Allied camp, presumably tells them he didn't just run away.
Right. He returns and lays out the plan for Zhang Ziya, the commander, and the instructions are incredibly precise. This is high-level magical warfare.
Let's break that down, because the detail here feels really important. This isn't just waving a wand.
Not at all. It's meticulous. First, Zhang Ziya has to go to Qi Mountain, build a special altar, a specific platform.
Bye.
Then he has to make a straw effigy, a grass man, and it has to be carefully inscribed with the name Zhao Gongming.
Okay, that sounds like sympathetic magic, like a voodoo doll, almost.
There are definite similarities in the principle, but it's more involved. This effigy needs two power points activated, a lamp placed at its head and another lamp at its feet.
Head and feet. Interesting. So light it up and curse him.
Not quite so simple.
Yeah.
The duration is key. Zhang Ziya has to perform a specific ritual. It involves walking the pattern of the Big Dipper constellation.
Cosmic alignment.
Exactly. Drawing specific charms, burning seals, and he has to do this 3 times every day for 21 days straight.
3 times a day for 3 weeks. That is serious dedication. That's commitment.
It's a relentless spiritual pressure campaign. It's not about one big magical blast. It's about slowly, methodically draining and binding Zhao Gongming's spiritual energy, his essence, over time.
And Luya promises to come back on the 21st day.
At noon on the 21st day. He says he'll be there to assist with the, let's call it the final step.
The genius of this, though, the victory seems almost assured before that final step. What actually happens to Zhao Gongming during those 21 days while Zhang Ziya is doing the ritual?
Well, this is where the psychological aspect really hits hard. The ritual starts working on him almost immediately. It targets his mind, his stability.
How so?
He becomes incredibly agitated.
Yeah.
Restless. The text says he gets fire-hearted, meaning like anxious, maybe angry, definitely unsettled. He absolutely cannot focus on military strategy or anything important.
So he's pacing, freaking out.
Totally. The description is great. It says he's just wandering from in front of the tent to behind the tent, basically running around scratching his ears and scratching his cheeks.
Yeah.
Like a man losing his grip.
Wow. So Lu Ya's strategy completely neutralizes him as a threat just through the sustained ritual pressure. He's too distracted, too internally chaotic to even use the Jiao scissors effectively, probably.
Exactly. His spiritual resilience is just being eroded day by day. And this distraction, this incapacitation, it actually creates a bit of a power vacuum on the enemy side.
Which someone else tries to fill.
Precisely. While Zhao Gongming is basically indisposed, another master from the enemy camp gets impatient. Bai Tianjun, the White Heavenly Lord, he's the master of the Blazing Flame Array, the Lian Zhen.
Another one of these deadly arrays.
A particularly nasty one. Bai Tianjun challenges the Western forces, probably frustrated by the stalemate or Zhao Gongming's weird behavior.
And Lu Ya sees an opportunity here.
Instantly, Lu Ya volunteers to go into the Blazing Flame Array himself.
Seriously, after avoiding a direct fight with the scissors, he volunteers for a death trap made of fire. What's the array like?
It's designed to incinerate anyone. It combines 3 kinds of devastating fire. Celestial fire, earthly fire, and the really terrifying samadhi fire. Pure spiritual heat.
Okay, why would Lu Ya walk into that? This seems like the moment he has to prove his earlier retreat wasn't just running away.
It's the perfect demonstration. And the reason he can do it is fundamental to who or what he is. The mythology tells us Lu Ya is intimately connected to fire. He's referred to as the treasure born of fire. He's the essence of separation from the earth, and even the spirit of samadhi itself.
Wait, the spirit of the fire that's in the array.
Exactly. Yeah. So for Lu Ya, these 3 fires, they're not enemies. The text says they're all in one family for him. They literally cannot harm him because he is them, in a sense.
So the array is completely useless against him. That's a serious trump card.
It's cosmological immunity. And he doesn't just stand there. He endures the full blast of all 3 fires for 2 hours.
2 hours, just soaking in divine flames.
Yep. And while he's in there, he's singing this defiant song, basically telling Bai Tianjun, "You're wasting your time, buddy. This can't hurt me."
That must have been quite a show for the Allied forces. Proof positive that they have someone truly extraordinary on their side.
Absolutely. It confirms his unique power, proves he transcends the enemy's magic. But he doesn't just survive the array.
He uses it as cover.
He uses it as the perfect staging ground for a counterattack.
Huh.
While he's still surrounded by these harmless-to-him flames, he pulls out that mysterious gourd he carries, the Hulu.
Ah, the gourd. Okay, what does it do?
This gourd is, well, it's weird. A beam of light shoots out from it. Stretches about 30 feet, the text says. And at the end of the beam, there's this creature.
A creature inside the gourd.
Apparently. It's tiny, only 7 inches tall. But it has eyes. And from its eyes shoot two beams of pure white light.
Okay, 7-inch creature shooting eye beams. Got it. These are the weapons.
These are the weapon.
Yeah.
Those white light beams instantly strike by Tianjun, the array master. They nail his Niwan palace.
Niwan palace, that's the crown of the head, right? Like the spiritual center.
Exactly. The mind, the spirit's anchor point. The beams hit him there, and he's instantly paralyzed, knocked unconscious, totally defenseless.
So the creature disables him. Then what?
Then Lu Bia performs another little ritual action. He bows slightly to the gourd, or maybe to the creature, mm-hmm. and says, please treasure to turn its body.
He asks the treasure, the creature, to turn.
Yes. And the little 7-inch creature rotates, mm-hmm. and the moment it turns, Bai Tianjun's head just falls off, cleanly decapitated.
Whoa, just like that.
Just like that. His soul, the story notes, goes straight to the investiture of the gods' platform and to await his final fate. Lu Ya just demonstrated absolute lethal power, completely bypassing the Array Master's own defenses. General Lu Ya, he's just broken one array, the Blazing Flame Array, I think.
That's the one.
And immediately, the master of the very next defense steps up. This is the feared Falling Soul Array.
Mm.
And its master is Yao Tianjun.
And the text gives us this amazing, pretty terrifying image of the guy. It really emphasizes his raw, almost demonic power. Face like gold, thick red beard, huge mouth, ferocious teeth. The text uses Afar.
Which means?
Roughly tusk maw, like something monstrous. His voice is like thunder, apparently, and he rides a deer, not some celestial cloud carrying a heavy mace. The source material really paints a picture of raw, intimidating force.
Yeah, that description alone, it suggests brute strength, doesn't it? Not necessarily subtlety or wisdom.
Exactly. And Ran Dang, who's commanding the Zhu forces, seems to think, okay, let's test that brute force with our own.
Right. So he orders Jiang Ziya to send in General Fang Jiang. And Fang Jiang is described basically as just tall and strong qi.
But this is the classic mistake, isn't it? Mortal strategy in a celestial war. Fang Jiang, he's confident in his physical power, you know? So he completely ignores the tricky setup of the array. He just charges Yao Tianjun, who's only pretending to fall back, leading him right into the trap.
And then what happens?
Yao Tianjun quickly gets up on his platform in the array and just throws down a handful of this deadly black sand, the tusk.
And that's all it takes.
That's it. Instantaneous. Fang Sheng has zero spiritual defense, no clue about this kind of magic. He's killed right there. His soul goes straight to the platform of investiture of the gods, the Jiunan.
Wow. Quick and brutal.
And what's fascinating is Yao Tianjun's reaction. He comes back out and basically taunts the immortals. He sneers that they sent the text calls him a pika.
The secular common man.
Right. A commoner to die. And he demands they send someone actually moral and pure if they want a real fight. He's challenging their whole spiritual basis, essentially betting his quick kill black sand is better than all their cultivation.
Okay, so that sets the stage. The next challenger has to be someone who embodies that purity and insight.
Exactly. So Ran Dang picks Qi Jingzi, one of the top disciples from the Jade Purity School.
And Qi Jingzi arrives differently, doesn't he? Not with the big challenge, but with a song.
Yeah, he comes in singing this specific song. The theme is all about like the joy of being beyond the material world, the unity of life and death, opening the heavenly gate. It's pure spiritual confidence.
So he's signaling wisdom over strength from the start.
Precisely. And when he confronts Yao Tianjun, he even reminds him, hey, I've been in this array before. I rescued Jiang Ziya's soul from here. He criticizes him for killing Fang Jiang so easily.
How does Yao Tianjun take that?
He just scoffs. He's super confident, claiming even a really powerful artifact like the Taiji diagram, the Yao's, which was used here before, is totally useless against his black sand.
That overconfidence.
Yeah.
Based on just one trick, basically.
Okay.
It's usually where they slip up, isn't it?
Always. And Qi Jingzi is ready for it. He knows exactly what he's facing. Let's talk about his defense, because this is where the insight really pays off.
Okay, how does he counter the black sand?
It's a perfect layered defense. He knows the sand is the main threat. So first, he projects this big spiritual shield, a heavenly cloud, how above his head for general protection.
Right.
Second, and this is crucial for physical contact, he manifests the 8 chigrams purple longevity immortal robe, the Wudshofer.
And that robe is special how?
It's impervious to the black sand. When Yao Tianjun throws it, the source confirms it. Just, it can't stick to him. It slides right off. Completely useless against the robe.
Okay, so spiritual purity plus the right artifact renders the black sand totally ineffective. But Qi Jingzi wasn't just there to defend, was he? He brought his own special weapon. What was his ace in the hole?
The yin-yang mirror. Yeah. Now, this is a specialized counterweapon perfect for this level of celestial fight. Qi Jingzi saw that the black sand was Yao Tianjun's only real offensive and defensive trick.
Mm-hmm.
Once that failed, Yao Tianjun got reckless. Predictable, even.
Wait, hang on. Why would Yao Tianjun, an immortal array master, see his supposedly unbeatable black sand fail and then immediately decide to come down from his platform and fight hand-to-hand? Okay. That seems amateurish.
It really does, doesn't it? But it just shows his arrogance and, frankly, his limited strategic thinking. It's exactly what Qi Jingzi was counting on. Yao Tianjun mistook his powerful artifact for, like, destiny being on his side.
So when the magic failed, he defaulted to, what, physical fighting?
Exactly. He defaulted back to the physical, which is a massive mistake against a refined celestial master like Qi Jingzi, who came prepared for that specific situation.
And as soon as Yao Tianjun starts coming down,
Qi Jingzi makes his move. He secretly flashes him right in the face with the yin-yang mirror. Boom. Yao Tianjun just falls, instantly defeated.
Array broken.
But notice the contrast here. Qi Jingzi takes the array master's head, yes, but the text specifically notes he pauses. He apologizes for breaking his vow to avoid killing. It emphasizes his discipline.
Right, maintaining that celestial conduct even in victory.
Then he sends the soul to the investiture platform, calmly retrieves the Taiji diagram that was trapped in there, and sends it back where it belongs. It was totally decisive, achieved not with stronger magic, necessarily,
but with better defense and knowing exactly when and how to use the right counterweapon.
Precisely.
Okay, so we've seen physical might lose to esoteric magic, the black sand, and then that esoteric magic gets beaten by spiritual purity combined with a specialized counter, the yin-yang mirror. But the pressure isn't just on the battlefield, is it? The source tells us that even as these arrays are falling, the real crisis for the Shang forces is brewing inside their own camp.
Yeah, this transition is crucial. It marks that shift from, you know, external visible damage to something internal, a slow decay. Grand Preceptor Wen Taishi is obviously upset about losing the Array Masters.
But he's absolutely horrified by what's happening to his key ally, Zhao Gongming.
You're right. Zhao Gongming.
And what exactly is happening? He's not wounded in the usual sense. He's just sleeping.
Continuously. For 6 or 7 days straight, snoring like thunder, the text says. And Wen Taishi knows this is deeply, deeply wrong. There's this core idea that true immortals don't sleep.
Why not?
Well, they need to maintain this purity of the 6 senses, right? Constant spiritual cultivation. So this nonstop death-like drowsiness, it's a sign of complete spiritual failure. It means his soul is basically scattered, gone wandering.
Okay, let's get into the mechanics of that. The text links this back to something that happened earlier involving Zhang Ziya.
Yes, exactly. It confirms the root cause. Zhao Gongming's Yuan Shen, his original spirit, his soul essence, was scattered when Zhang Ziya performed a specific bowing ritual targeting him earlier in the story.
And losing the Yuan Shen, why is that so catastrophic for an immortal?
The Yuan Shen isn't just a soul like we might think of it. It's more like the divine operating system.
Yeah.
It's the spiritual anchor that makes them celestial, not mortal. It lets them use magic, travel vast distances, consciously cultivate their immortality.
So without it?
Without the Yuan Shen present and anchored, the body just defaults to its most basic mortal function, sleep. Constant, inescapable sleep. Zhao Gongming is physically there, still powerful in potential, but he's spiritually comatose. He's effectively dead to the world of gods and war.
Wen Taishi must realize he's facing something way beyond a normal injury then.
Oh, absolutely. He consults the remaining Array Masters, desperate for answers. He even uses divination, throws a gold coin gua, trying to figure out the source of this spiritual attack.
And the divination works. It tells him what's happening.
It does. It reveals the specific named threat. And the knowledge is chilling. It's the sorcerer Luya.
Luya again. He broke the first array, now this.
Yeah. Luya is at Mount Kishan, the zoo base, using the Nailhead Seven Arrows book, The Hill Bee, to ritually shoot Zhao Gongming to death from afar.
Okay, that sounds bad. What is that book?
It's basically the ultimate spiritual weapon in this context. It's a ritual that directly targets the scattered Yuan Shen, even from hundreds of miles away. Needs no physical contact, just the ritual, the focus, and time.
So Zhao Gongming hears this news. They must wake him up briefly.
Presumably, yes. And he's horrified. But look at Wen Taishi. The crisis throws him into complete chaos. The text says his mind is drifting and chaotic. He can't think straight. They have this massive strategic dilemma.
Yeah, how do you fight a weapon that's invisible and working from miles away?
Well, one of the remaining masters, Wang Tianjun, I think, suggests the obvious. Mount a full-scale attack on Kishan. Storm the place, find the book, destroy it, or steal it.
A direct assault.
But Wen Taishi, even in his panic, his military sense kicks in. He shoots that down. He figures Luya would totally expect an open attack. They'd be walking right into a trap. It would fail.
So direct attack is out. What's the counter strategy then? If they can't fight the weapon?
They have to steal it. Secretly. Wen Taishi insists. Jai, say, only act in secret. Do not take it openly.
Okay, so how do they plan to do that? Sneak into the enemy headquarters?
Exactly. Zhang Tianjun proposes this high-risk stealth mission. Send two minor disciples, Chen Jugong and Ya Xiaoxi, basically expendable assets to use earth escape magic.
Earth escape, like magical tunneling.
Yeah, tunnel magically right into Kishan, bypass all the guards and defenses, snatch the Nailhead Seven Arrows book, and get out. That's the play to resolve the crisis.
Wow, that's a desperate gamble. Sending two low-level guys on a mission like that? It really shows when Taishi has run out of conventional options, doesn't it?
Completely. He's resorting to the deepest levels of, you know, esoteric infiltration just to save his most vital general. It's the only viable option they can think of.
But even as they make this plan, the narrator steps in with a comment, right?
Yes, and it's such a poignant moment. It reminds the reader of the epic's grand theme, destiny. The source basically notes the futility of this whole secret plan against the will of heaven. It says something like, heaven's will is already settled on the true destined ruler. Why bother the grand preceptor with secret arrangements?
Oof. In the hero's camp. Things are quiet. Ran Dang and the disciples are meditating, focusing on this ritual against Gongming.
And then Luya, the one orchestrating this whole Seven Arrows book thing, he suddenly gets this feeling. The text says his heart's blood suddenly surged.
Which is, you know, not just a minor flutter. It's a massive psychic alarm bell going off. He knows instantly that the enemy commander, Wen Taishi, has sent spies.
He knows they're coming for the book. And he's blunt about it. He says if they succeed, none of them will survive. That's how critical this piece of magic is.
Yeah, the urgency is palpable. So Ran Dang immediately dispatches Neza and Yang Qin to warn Zhang Xia. Xia's the one actually doing the ritual, alone.
And here's a key detail. The speed difference. Neza, he's on his wind fire wheels. Almost instantaneous travel.
Right, zooms off. But Yang Jian's on horseback, and the text specifically notes his horse slowed down and was delayed. Just a little bit.
Seems like a small thing, maybe just a narrative detail, but it turns out to be huge.
Absolutely pivotal. Because while Neza is racing ahead, the thieves are already there. When Taishi sent two disciples, Chen Jigong and Yao Shouxi.
How did they get in so fast?
They used earth tunneling magic. Popped up right inside the camp, probably around 2 a.m., the second watch.
And Xia is completely vulnerable. He has to be for the ritual. Hair down, sword out, writing charms, chanting, bowing.
Total concentration. And just as he bows, they dart in, grab the book gone, vanished like wind and clouds, the text says.
Oh, man. So Xia hears something, looks up.
And the book's gone. He's probably thinking, it's over, we failed. And right then, Neza arrives, panting out the warning from Luya.
Talk about terrible timing. The warning arrives after the theft.
Exactly. Confirms Zia's worst nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
But Neza doesn't stick around. He immediately spins around and blasts off again on his wheels, trying to track those thieves who are escaping using the same earth magic.
Okay, so Neza's chasing, Zia's reeling. What about young Jan, the one who got delayed?
Right. This is where that delay becomes, well, almost like fate stepping in. It puts him in the perfect position.
You think it was fate? Or just, you know, a slow horse. The text just says delayed.
It's ambiguous, isn't it? The text doesn't say why he was delayed. But given what happens next, it feels like more than luck. Yang Jian is traveling, maybe a bit behind Neza, And he encounters this really strange wind.
Ah, the wind. Yeah, the description is so vivid. It's not just a breeze.
No, it's described like a tiger roaring, a fierce beast bellowing. It shakes mountains, collapses peaks.
And that creepy detail, it makes flowers and grass wither instantly. That's not natural.
Definitely not. And Yang Jian, being incredibly sharp, he gets it immediately.
Yeah.
Yang Jian, we think of him as this powerhouse warrior, but here it's his awareness that shines. How does he even know they're coming?
Well, he's on the move, and it's subtle. The text says he notices the wind, feels off. Falai de Yiguai, the approaching wind was strange and unusual.
So not just a weather observation. It's a disturbance in the force, kind of.
Something like that. He recognizes a magical signature, and he immediately puts two and two together. It's Qin Shi Gong and Ya Xiaoxi. They're using their movement magic, and they're heading home, probably feeling pretty pleased with themselves about stealing that Jianshu.
So he reads the signs, knows who it is, and figures out where they're headed, their base. That's key for an ambush, right? Knowing the destination.
Absolutely. And his response is just elegant, so simple. He gets off his horse, grabs dirt and grass, tie, just everyday stuff off the ground.
Dirt and grass, seriously.
Seriously. He throws them in the air and just says one word.
G. Like go or now.
Yeah, execute, hurry, something like that. It's the command prompt for this massive magical illusion.
That contrast is wild. Mm-hmm. You know, dirt and grass triggering this huge reality bending spell. What does that tell us about his power level?
It's his mastery, absolute mastery. The components don't matter. The intent does. He doesn't need fancy reagents. He can weave reality from literally nothing.
And the reality he weaves, it's not just a little smokescreen.
Not even close. He conjures a Dai Ying, a great camp, huge. Fully staffed, men, horses, all the gear, Ren and Kixie, everything you'd expect in a major military camp.
Okay, but here's the crucial part, right? The specific look of the camp.
Exactly. The text stresses this. It looked identical to Grand Preceptor Wen Taishi's actual old camp. Wen Taishi Yingyi Ban Wu Hair. No difference whatsoever.
Why is that identical look so important? Psychologically, what does that do?
It completely disarms them. If it was just any camp, maybe they pause, maybe something feels wrong. But seeing their own familiar base, the place they expected to return to in triumph, it bypasses all critical thought.
Because familiarity equals safety, especially when you think you've just won big.
Precisely. It taps right into their pride and their expectations. Makes them careless.
And then the final touch to sell it. He doesn't just build the set. He plays the lead role.
Correct. He transforms himself into Wen Taishi, their boss. And he takes his place in the main command tent, the Zhun Junza. The setting's perfect. The authority figure is perfect. The trap is set. It's irresistible.
Which brings us right into Act Two. The thieves' confidence. They've done the deed. They're flying high. And they see home sweet home. Their guard must be completely down.
Totally down. The text says they were dagbear overjoyed when they saw it. Straight in. Which, you know, just shows how much they felt they belonged there, how secure they felt.
But the illusion is so good, it even has... like procedures. They don't just wander in.
Right. Another layer of Yang Jian's genius. They get spotted immediately by someone named Deng Zhong, who's depicted as patrolling the outer camp. So they get reported.
Wow. So they have to go through the motions. Makes it feel even more real, doesn't it? Like bureaucratic reality.
Exactly. It smooths over any potential weirdness. Just standard procedure.
Okay. So they finally get in front of Taishi, who is actually Yang Jian in disguise. They're ready to brag. This is where the intel comes out.
Oh, yeah. They proudly report stealing the Jianshu from Zheng Ziya. But then they give Yang Zin the gold. They explain how.
How they did it. What do they say?
They boast that they waited until Yang Ziya was busy with a ritual, actually bowing down. So boom, vulnerability confirmed.
And they mention that Nindun again.
Yes. They confirm they used their earth-burrowing trick to snatch the book right then.
Right.
They're basically handing over their playbook, thinking they're just giving a mission report.
That's incredible. He doesn't need to interrogate them. Their own ego does the work. He learns their method, their timing.
And confirms how important the item is. That intel is arguably a bigger win than just getting the artifact back.
So Yang Jian, playing the happy boss, keeps the act going, expresses delight, demands the book.
Yep. Great happiness, the text says. They hand it over. No suspicion at all.
And he just pockets it.
Secures it in his sleeve. Feng Yu Xin Nei.
Yeah.
Nice and safe. Mission accomplished, really. Artifacts recovered, intelligence gathered. Just need to get them out of the picture.
Without blowing his cover.
Right. So he gives them a perfectly normal order. Go to the rear camp, the Ho Ying. Report to your master, your Shifu. Standard procedure again.
Sends them off, still thinking about their success, heading to the next step. completely oblivious.
Perfectly distracted. Which sets up Act 3, the reveal.
Yeah.
The moment the illusion shatters.
This must happen fast, as soon as they turn around.
Instantly. The moment they turn to leave, Young Jian just... Shuleishu. Retracts the spell. No fade out. Just gone.
What's the immediate effect on them, sensory-wise?
It's described as a huge shock. They hear Yi Shenglei seeing a sound like thunder right behind them. Imagine the sound of that whole mass of reality just vanishing.
And when they look back?
Nothing. But Jian, the great camp is gone. They're just standing there on empty ground.
The psychological whiplash must be intense. From a secure base to nothing in a split second.
Utterly disorienting. The text says they were ruchi ruzui, as if drunk or obsessed. Confused, doubting their own senses, their own magic even.
Total cognitive meltdown.
And Yang Jian gives them zero time to recover. He appears right then, but in his true form. White horse, spear at the ready. That shift alone from the familiar boss figure to this sudden, aggressive warrior must have been terrifying.
And then the ultimate taunt, just twisting the knife.
Return my book, Huan Wushulai. Knowing full well he's already got it tucked away.
Oh, that's brutal. How do they react?
Your rage. Danu. They realize they've been played, completely humiliated. Confusion turns instantly to fury. They attack him with four swords.
So the deception got the book and the intel, but now the fight is on for real, and it sounds like a serious one.
Oh, yeah. It's epic. Yang Jian's spear is like a Danabon, a great python, fast, deadly.
And Neza?
Neza arrives just then, likely having followed the trail of that weird wind too, or maybe just the general direction. He joins the fight.
How does the fight go?
It's fast and brutal. The text says, the sky was bleak and the earth dim. Neza's spear is Yao Shousi. Yang Jian gets Chen Ji Gong in the side.
And that's it?
That's it. Both their souls head straight to the platform of investiture of the gods. Mission accomplished, book recovered.
Wow. So Yang Jian explains this decoy strategy back to Xia.
He does, and Xia is, understandably, incredibly impressed. He praises Yang Jian, heavily calls him someone with both wisdom and courage, and gives Neza props too for helping with a pure heart.
Intelligence really saved the day there. That slight delay was everything.
It really was. But this victory, as crucial as it is, sends immediate, devastating ripples through the enemy camp.
Right, let's shift perspective when Taishi is waiting for his victorious spies.
And instead, he gets the news they're dead, killed en route, and the book is obviously back with the enemy.
How does he take it?
He's shattered, utterly heartbroken, weeping, beating his chest. He knows what this means for Zhao Gongming. Without that book, the ritual can proceed, and Gongming is doomed.
And he has to be the one to tell Gongming. That's rough.
It is. He goes with two other masters to Gongming's tent. Gongming is resting, still weak from earlier efforts. But the moment he hears the news...
What happens?
He sits bolt upright, eyes wide, starts sweating profusely. He knows instantly. The intel failure seals his fate.
No denial, just acceptance.
Immediate acceptance. And regret. He cries out, basically, I should have listened to my sister, Yang Xiao. She warned me. This disaster will cost me my life.
It's tragic, in a way, this incredibly powerful immortal, been around since the dawn of time, practically.
Yeah, he laments being taken down by Lu Ya, who he probably sees as way below his league. It really drives home that theme in Feng Jin, you can have all the power in the universe, but if you defy heaven's will, or maybe just get out strategizing.
Your number's up, but he doesn't just despair, does he? He gives instructions.
He does, and this part is fascinating. He accepts death, but he's already planning his posthumous move. It's incredibly strategic, even in resignation.
What does he tell Wen Taishi to do?
He gives very specific instructions. After he dies from the ritual, which he knows is coming soon, Wen Taishi needs to wrap his ultimate weapon, the golden dragon scissors, carefully in his Taoist robe, then tie it all securely with a silk sash.
Why the wrapping? Why the scissors inside?
It's for his sisters. He knows they'll come for his body. He tells Taishi, give this bundle the robe with the scissors inside to my three sisters. Tell them receiving this robe is like seeing me alive.
Wow, that's heavy. It's a final gift, a symbol, but also...
It's also passing on the means for vengeance. He's ensuring his most powerful weapon gets directly into the hands of his grieving, powerful sisters. The empty robe signifies his death, but the scissors within promise future conflict. It's incredibly moving and quite ominous.
And things escalate immediately, don't they? The grief in the camp boils over.
Instantly. Seeing Wen Taishi so distraught, another master, Wang Bian, he's the master of the Red Water Array, he just storms out, furious, challenging the hero's side. The emotional dam is broken.
So the heroes have to respond. Who do they send?
Randing picks Cao Bao, who's described as a loose immortal, maybe not strictly aligned, but fighting with them. And Cao Bao accepts.
But there's always a but.
But first, he decides to give Wang Bian a lecture right there on the potential battlefield. He starts talking about fighting for the true master and how Zhao Gongming brought this on himself by defying heaven's will. Predictably, Wang Bian isn't interested in debating theology. He just retreats into his array formation, drawing Cao Bao in pursuit. And the fight shifts instantly from, you know, talk back to brutal magic.
This is the red water array. What does it do?
It's horrifying. Wang Bian throws down some kind of broken gourd, and this red water just floods out towards Cao Bao.
And the effect.
The source gives this absolutely chilling description. If even one drop touches you, your entire body, arms, legs, everything just dissolves into blood water instantly.
Oh my God. So Cao Bao.
Gone. Vaporized. Lecture cut. Very, very short. The text says only his robe and sash were left floating there. His soul, of course, zips off to the investiture platform.
So they win this intricate spy game to get the book back and doom Gongming, only to lose someone immediately to just overwhelming, gruesome power.
It's a stark reminder. Strategy won one battle, but the enemy response is immediate, furious, and utterly lethal. It's a shock tactic from Wang Bian.
And he doesn't stop there, does he?
Nope. Having demonstrated the array's power, Wang Bian issues another challenge, daring anyone else to try.
So who's next?
Renandang, seeing just how deadly this thing is, orders Dao Dizanchun to face the array next. And that's where the chapter and our focus today kind of leaves us hanging.